There's a reason that Pastor and the staff don't advertise that the senior pastor is not going to be here. We do that on purpose because a lot of you wouldn't show up. No matter who's speaking, especially if you heard it was me, you wouldn't show up. But there's just a reason we don't tell people, because you'd be like, hey, the pastor's not going to be there today. It'd be a good day to skip church. And so we keep it quiet. So now it's a surprise. If you get up and leave right now, I will call you out. Oh, man. I want to talk to you today about a young man who thought he was a nobody, but he really turned out to be a somebody in the Old Testament. In fact, he made his way all the way to Hebrews chapter 11 and in the hall of faith. And he was a young man. His name was Gideon, found in Judges chapter 6 and chapter 7. And I'm going to go through both of these books here, but I'll do it in a timely fashion to get you out of here before that magical hour. You know what the magical hour is, right? Straight up noon. I'll try to get you out of here before that. Can't make a promise here, but I'll try my best. Now, give you a little history here about Israel at this time. Israel, of course, in the book of Judges, Israel is being ruled by judges. In the previous chapter, in chapter 5 of the book of Judges, Deborah was the judge, and Israel experienced 40 years of peace and prosperity during those 40 years. But at the end of that, they became complacent, and they begin to turn their back on God, and they were experiencing apostasy, which is a rebellion against God. And so in doing that, God sent these people to occupy them and to torture them, basically. They were called the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the people of the east. And they would come into Israel and they would steal and plunder and take all their crops and all their young goats and their camels and their donkeys and cattle or whatever. And they would come in, and there was nothing Israel could do about it because there were so many of these people. And so it became a situation where it was the people of Israel were hiding up in the mountains. They were hiding in caves. They were trying to hide their food. And they're trying to do everything they could incognito to keep it away from the Amalekites, the Midianites. And so here's this young man. His name is Gideon. Now, Gideon is a man who didn't think much of himself. His clan, he was part of, he thought they were the low, as far as the people go, they were the low on the totem pole. He himself confessed that he was the lowest in his family. And so now what he finds himself doing, he's down in a wine press, and he's thrashing wheat. Now, you would normally do this in a wine press, because when you thrash wheat, what you would normally do, they would bundle up this wheat that they would cut down, and they would put it in bundles called sheaves. Remember the old song, bringing in the sheaves, bringing in the sheaves? That's what they're talking about. And they would bring this wheat, and they would usually have it in a high place, somewhere where the wind was blowing. And they would take a tool called a flail, and a flail was just basically a stick with a hinge on it, and they would beat this wheat and beat it and beat it. Then they would take a pitchfork, but they called it a winnowing fork, and they would shove it in there, and they'd pick up this wheat, and they would throw it in the air, and all the chaff and everything would blow with the wind, and the seed, the wheat itself, would fall to the ground, and that's where they gathered it, okay? But here is Gideon. He's down in a wine press doing this. He's doing it like this because he has to hide. He's trying to keep a low profile in gathering this wheat, because he knows that if he does this out in the open, everybody can see it, the Midianites, the Amalekites, they will come and they will steal all this wheat from him. And so he finds himself down here in this wine press of all places, threshing wheat. And it may basically probably double work for him to do this, but he had to do it to keep it hidden. Now, Israel was in a place here where God wanted to bless Israel. He always wants to bless his people. Do you know he wants to bless you? He wants to bless you. He wants to pour out a blessing upon you. And if you walk faithfully after him, he will bless you. He'll bless you in big ways, and he'll bless you in small ways. had somebody tell me today, he said, Mark, after you preached that sermon, he said, I got thinking about something. He said, how God has blessed me, and blessed him with a vehicle. And he began to tell me the story how he got this vehicle. And it was just God's blessing. It had to be. I have been walking under a blessing that has been handed down to me from generations above me. My dad, when he was in his 90s, and he was beginning to get frail, every time we'd have him pray over something, sometimes we'd have him pray a meal, we'd have him pray over something, he would always pray that God would bless his kids and his grandkids every time. And I remember this one time, my sister was telling me, Naomi was her name, is her name, and she was sitting beside my dad on the couch. My dad, at 90 years old, was diagnosed with prostate cancer. And the doctor told him, Noah, his name is Noah, Noah, you're 90 years old. Yes, you have prostate cancer, but you're probably just going to die of old age. So they didn't do anything about it. But this caused him a lot of pain. And he's sitting on this couch, and my sister could tell he was in a lot of pain. But he just sat there. And finally he turned around, he started getting off the couch, and she was watching, Dad, what are you doing? And he got down on his knees, and she thought, oh, he's going to pray that God will help him with his pain and his suffering he's going through. And he turned around, he got down on the couch, and he prayed one prayer, that God would bless his kids and his grandkids, and never once ask for anything about himself. You see, that's the kind of blessing that I believe I live under. I have little blessings that come along. I remember, well, there's going to be a blessing here that I'm going to tell you about. You're going to think, well, you're a weirdo. Well, that's beside the point. My son and I was invited to go on a bear hunt in Wisconsin. I had been on this twice before. But we were invited this time, and they said that my son Sean could come with me because I had been before. Now, we're going on a bear hunt. We're not hunting bear. So we're basically going to help hunters hunt. And we're going to go up there. We were invited to go up there by a guy named Jack Link. Jack Link is the CEO and founder of Jack Link's Beef Jerky. Okay, he is the man, Jack Link. And he is I told him one day, I had my hand on his shoulder. We were getting a picture with him. I said, Jack, is it okay if I tell people that Jack Link is a friend of mine? He said, absolutely. And so he is. What a great friend, huh? Anyways, we're invited to go up there, and I had been twice before. And what we would do is we'd go up there, we'd help bear hunters. We didn't actually bear hunt, but we would just assist. And the way they would hunt bear in Wisconsin is they would run the bear with dogs. The dogs would tree the bear up the biggest tree you ever seen in your entire life. They always went the biggest tree. Then the hunters would come, and the hunters would shoot the bear out of the tree. Then Sean and I would help, processing the bear, whatever, dragging it out of the woods, whatever we had to do. And we would help with the dogs and just stuff like that. It was kind of a fun trip. And so one evening, they served us bear in the lodge. That we were staying in the Jack Link's lodge up there. And they were served us bear, and it was really good. I really enjoyed it. I kept bragging on how good it was to Jack. And Jack, the night before we left, Jack told me, he says, Mark, there's some bear meat in the freezer here at the lodge. He said, you just help yourself take some of that home with you. And I'm like, oh, man, that's wonderful. Next morning, Sean and I got up to leave, and we got up. It was about 5 o'clock in the morning. It's still dark. And we got up and gathered up our stuff, and we hopped in the pickup and headed down the highway. Got about 20 miles down the highway, and I'm like, Sean, oh, no. He said, what? I said, I forgot to get that bear meat. He's like, oh, man, we were so far down the highway. We just didn't, we was heading home, and we just didn't want to turn around and go back. And so we went on down the highway, kind of disappointed. And about 5 miles down further, I saw something on the shoulder of the highway. And I'm like, Sean, did you see that? There was a bear laying on the shoulder of the highway. And we went down. It was a four-lane highway. We went down, and we turned around and cut back and come on. And I shined the headlights right on this bear laying on the shoulder. And I hopped out of the truck, and I ran over there. Of course, I kicked it to make sure it wasn't still alive. And I stuck my hand up under its arm, and it was still warm. I told Sean, I said, this bear just got hit by a car. And we're like, oh, my goodness, this is the greatest thing ever. So we drug it out behind the truck, and we're thinking, well, we better call somebody and tell them, we don't know the law in Wisconsin. We don't know if you can keep bear. We didn't have no idea. So we kind of Googled it. People were saying, yeah, you can keep. They charge you $500 a bear, all this stupid stuff. So we waited until the sheriff, but we called the sheriff's department. It was like 5:30 in the morning by now. And we called the sheriff's department, and the lady at the sheriff's department says, yeah, you can keep the bear, but you better call the conservation department. They opened at 8 o'clock. You call them and see what you got to do. So we did. We took the bear, and we drug it down the ditch, and we're gutting it out right there by the highway. We got it all gutted out, and we drag it over to the truck, and we're fixing to throw it in the back of the truck. Well, here comes this other pickup down the highway on the other side, in the other lane, and I tell him he was slowing down, And he came down and he whipped in. There was a crossover right there, and he whipped in and come up there beside us. And I told Sean, I said, what's he? I thought his wife hit the bear and she was going, he wanted to come and get it. I thought all kinds of things. But he pulled up beside us. He rolled his window down. He's like, hey, there's a bigger one right up there around the corner. We're like, boom. We threw that one in the truck, drove up there, and I pulled in beside. There was a deputy sheriff with his lights on, and he was behind an 18-wheeler. And we thought the 18-wheeler hit the bear because the bear was laying on the shoulder right there. We could see it. And so that sheriff, he saw us pull in behind him. And so he comes walking back here. Like I said, what do you guys want? And I told him, I said, hey, we just picked up a bear on the highway down there and put it in the truck. I said, there's another one laying right here. I said, I wonder if we could get it too. He goes, I don't care. So we got it, drug it down the ditch, gutted it out, throwed it in the truck. Now we got two bears in the back of the truck. I'm telling you, folks, this is the greatest day ever for me and Sean. Y'all think it's crazy, but this is like Christmas. I'm not kidding you. And so we waited about 8 o'clock. I called the conservation department. I got a hold of their headquarters there in Wisconsin. And the lady I talked to, she goes, okay. She goes, yeah. She goes, you're going to have to talk to a conservation agent. She said, I'm going to give you his phone number. I'll call him, give you his phone number. He'll call you. Within 10 minutes, he called. And we're apprehensive about all this. We don't know. We still don't know if we're going to get to keep these bears. And I said, hello. He said, hey, this is a conservation agent here in Wisconsin, blah, blah, blah. He goes, so you found a couple of bear on the highway. I said, yes, sir. He said, what are you going to do with them? I said, we're going to take them back to Missouri and eat them. And he started laughing. I'm serious. That's what we're going to do. And he goes, well, he said, you can keep them. He said, now you got to take them to a check-in station. He said, you just write out a check and make it out to the Wisconsin Conservation Department, whatever. I said, okay. I said, how much money are we talking here? How much it's going to cost? He said, I think it's $35 a bear. Boy, I feel good. We'll take that. So we take out down the road to this place we're going to check him in, and a phone rings, and it's the conservation agent again. And I'm like, Sean, it's that conservation agent. I thought, it's going to be worse news or bad news. And I said, hello, yeah, this is conservation. Hey, he said, I've done some research on that, about that, those bear tags and keeping those bears. He said, the law changed 2 months ago. He said, there's no charge on you keeping those bears. Two free bear from Wisconsin. It was the greatest day ever. We packed them things. We bought 25, 30 bags of ice because it was kind of warm. And we dumped it on top of them bear and bought a tarp, put it on top of that, and drove all the way. Sean was stationed in St. Louis and Scott Air Force Base because he was in the Navy. And we drove straight to Scott Air Force Base, pulled them things out of the truck and put them in the yard, got some pictures. People driving by in St. Louis wondering what in the world. I brought them home. I hung them in a tree at my house there in Morrisville, just down the road here. And people would drive by. People pull into my driveway because you don't see that very often here in Missouri. And I had one bear laying in the yard, and the other bear hanging in a tree. People stopping, looking at it. I'm telling you, folks, it was the greatest blessing I could have ever received. I call it the favor of God. That's what I call it. Now, did God cause them people to hit a bear, damage their car, kill the bear and all that? No, he didn't do that so I could be blessed. But all of that happened because things happened. And then God said, you know what? Them bear killed and dead. I'm going to let Mark have those. And that's exactly what happened. The favor of God. So I'm telling you right now, God wants to bless all of you in some way. In some way, you need to look at some things that happen in your life that are simple, but they're good, and say, God, thank you for that blessing. Because that's what that is. Good things, all good things come from God. So remember that. Israel was sitting there in their turmoil, and God wanted to bless them. He wanted to bless them richly. He was always wanting to love and to bless his people, the Israelites. But the Midianites and the Amalekites would plunder their country and take everything from them. And finally, out of desperation, Israel starts to cry out to God. Now let me tell you something. God loves it when you get desperate for him. But let me tell you, we should live a life that is always desperate for him. We sing that song. It's an older song. I'm desperate for you. I'm desperate for you. Are you really? Are you really? You see, this is one of my pet peeves right here. And it should not be because it's not God's, but it's my pet peeve. And it's this. People out there will go through something in their life that causes them turmoil and angst and devastation of some kind, whether it's in a marriage, their kids, or whatever. And they'll come to the church, and they'll want the church to surround and love them, and we do. And we pray for them to God help them with their situation. Lord, touch their life. And we do this. We bring them in and we love on them, don't we? And then when their situation gets better, they're gone. And you don't ever see them again. It's the craziest thing. But people out there, when they're desperate, when they get to the lowest ebb of their life, they will cry out to God or want to come in here. And I just wish they would stay and stick and stay where they come for this help and this healing. They realize this is where they need to be. But they don't sometimes. And they come in and they're gone. But be desperate. Yes, he loves it when you're desperate for him. And when you get desperate for him, he comes. And his grace and his mercy is tremendous, as you're going to find out here in the rest of this. So the deliverer is called. His name is Gideon. Now, Gideon is thrashing this wheat, as I was saying. He's thrashing, he's working, he's probably praying, Lord, why is all this happening? He's pounding this wheat, oh God, where are you, God? And there's something that happens to Gideon that in the Old Testament you find it in and throughout, and it's called a theophany. It's where there is an appearance of a heavenly being that is physically seen by man. And so one appears, the ultimate one appears here. It's called an angel of God. Anytime you see the angel of God, that is the early appearance of Jesus Christ himself way before the incarnation in Bethlehem. That's him. And he appears to Gideon as Gideon is thrashing this wheat. And this angel of God says to him in verse 11, "The Lord is with you, mighty man of valor." Or you can interpret it this way, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." Here's this little man, pounding wheat, thinks low of himself, and Jesus calls him, the angel Lord calls him a mighty warrior. Pardon me, Lord, where have you been? I've heard all the stories. I've heard all the great things that have happened to Israel. I've heard about Egypt. I've heard about the Red Sea. I've heard about all of these things that have happened. And you have seemed like you have forsaken us. You know, there's some of you that have prayed prayers, all of us have at some point in our life, and we sometimes feel like that God has forsaken us. Like, where are you, Lord? Really, right? There's things that you go through in your life and you just wonder, God, where are you? And there's an old song that says he was there all the time waiting patiently in line. He was there all the time. "Oh, mighty man of valor, the wonders I have seen," Gideon said, "in Egypt, you have abandoned us." And then the angel Lord said, "Go in this might of yours and deliver Israel." What? What might? I have an idea that Gideon was saying, "Might of mine? What are you talking about? What might?" Or you can interpret that strength. What do I have? "For I am the lowest of the low, and my family is, and I am the lowest of my family. And I have some kind of might. I have some kind of strength." I want to tell you the might and the strength that Gideon had this morning. And when I name these off, try to find, is there one or two or three or four of them that maybe you can say, wow, I didn't think about it. Maybe I have that might too. Number one, Gideon had this might of humble. He was a humble man. He didn't think he was anybody. Maybe he was even to the extreme of humility. But he didn't think highly of himself at all. He was a humble man. Number two, he had the might of caring. He cared about his country. He cared about his people. He cared about the things they were going through. And he wanted to see them delivered from this. He cared about everything that was happening to them. He had the might of knowledge. He knew what God had done in the past. He had heard the great things that God had done, the deliverer that he was. Where is he now? But he had the might of knowledge. He also had the might. Now, I'll tell you this next might right here, folks. This next one. This is a good one. If you can take this might and you can hang on to it and you can hold fast to it and live a life like this, you're going to be all right. He had the might of spiritually hungry. You know what that means? It means to long for God. It means to want all that God has for you. You know, this church right here, this is an institution. I didn't set this institution up. You didn't set it up. God set this institution up. And we are involved in all kinds of institutions in our life. But this is the most important one right here. It's church. Your church family. It is the only institution that God made for man, for us to come together and to worship him as one. This is it. And yet we all get involved in all these other institutions, whether it's sports or whatever, and we neglect this one here so much. If you're spiritually hungry, you will do everything you can to come together to worship him and to glorify him. It's very important. He had the might of teachable. He was teachable. Gideon was teachable. He listened to what the angel of the Lord said. He had a spirit that was able to be taught. He had the might of the weak. What? Yeah. Gideon, he was kind of a weak man. In a lot of ways. He probably wasn't a big man of stature. Maybe he was weak physically, I don't know. But he didn't think very highly of himself. So he had the might of weak. Now in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 9, it says, Paul wrote this, "In my weakness he is made strong." And then verse 10 he said, "For when I am weak, then I am strong." Gideon had the might of weak. You see, Gideon's problem in his life was that he was thinking about this one thing about himself, that he was the lowest of his family. That's the one thing he thought about himself. All these other things about himself that were there, and they're real, he just didn't think about them. There wasn't even a blip on his radar. All he was concerned about was the fact that he was a nobody, and he wasn't focusing on the big picture of his life and who he really was. There was a man that worked in a factory. It's a rather large factory, and this factory worked with a lot of wood. And this man was leaving the factory one day, getting off work, and he was pushing a wheelbarrow. And inside the wheelbarrow, he had a little box. And as he was going by security, security stopped him. Security guy comes over and says, "What do you got in the box?" He goes, "Sawdust." He said, "What are you doing with sawdust?" He said, "I just use it around the house, you know, different things, the garden, whatever." He goes, "All right, open up, let me look." Opens up, dug in there. Sure enough, it's sawdust. "All right, go on." He wheels on out of there. Next day, same guy, same security guard. He has a wheelbarrow. He's pushing the wheelbarrow, and the security guard stops him again. And he says, "What do you got in the box?" He said, "Sawdust." "What are you doing with all that sawdust? Let me look at it." So he opens it. Sure enough, so, "All right, go on." Pushes the wheelbarrow, leaves. Third time. Here he comes again next day with a wheelbarrow, box in the middle of it. Security guy stops him and says, "What do you got in the box?" "Sawdust." "All right, let's look." "All right, get on." Fourth time he does it, the security guard says, "Wait, hold on. Now let me tell you something. You come coming out here every day with this box right here." He said, "That's sawdust." "And look, yeah, that's sawdust." He goes, "Let me tell you something." The security guard said, "Let me tell you. If you'll tell me what you're up to, because I know you're up to something. If you'll tell me what you're up to, I won't tell anybody. And it'll just be between me and you." And the guy goes, "I'm stealing wheelbarrows." You see, the security guy was focused on the little thing, the little box. And the guy was stealing wheelbarrows the whole time. But he couldn't see it, because he was focused on the little thing. We all do this. We all have this one thing in our life that is probably our weakness, and we let that hold us back from everything that we could be doing in the kingdom of God. I could go through here with a lot of you that I know, and I could pick out your strengths, probably name three or four of them off just like that. Now, you may look at that, oh, I didn't realize I had that strength, but you do. But we try to focus on, we tend to focus on these things that is our weakness, because we all have that too. But look at the big picture, my friends. Gideon here, he had all these mights, all these strengths, and he just did not realize it. So Gideon is okay with all this. He is okay. I tell you what, he said to the angel, Lord, he said, I want to see a sign. He said, would you wait right here while I go get an offering and bring it back here? The angel, Lord, says, okay, go. So Gideon goes, he gets some meat, he gets some bread, he cooks the meat, he takes the broth, the bread, and the meat back out to the angel of the Lord. The angel of the Lord says, put the bread and the meat on this rock and pour the broth over it. Gideon did that, poured the broth, and the angel of the Lord took his staff, and he touched that rock, and when he did, fire come up out of that rock, and it burned up that meat and the bread and the broth, and then immediately the angel of the Lord, the Bible says, disappeared right in front of Gideon. Now, I don't know about you. If that happened to me, I'd say, okay, that's good enough right there. My faith has just been risen to the highest level it could ever be. But that's not the case here. Because Gideon goes along here, and he's thinking about this. I think time passed, probably several days. And his weak His faith became weak. He didn't lose faith completely, but it just became weak. You see, I'll take weak faith over no faith any day. Gideon had weak faith because he tells the Lord, he says, listen, Lord, I've got to have something else here. He says, if I take this wool fleece, it's like a wool that's been made in almost to a garment type thing, and it's made out of wool. He said, I'm going to take this fleece right here. He said, I'm going to lay it down here in this wine press. And he said, when I get up in the morning, I would like to see dew on the wine, on the fleece, only dew on the fleece, but no dew on the grass or the ground or anything around it. And then I will believe. Next morning, he wakes up, he grabs that fleece, and what he does, he wrings out a whole bowl of water. The ground is dry. And Gideon's like, pardon me, Lord. He said, I don't want to make you angry or anything, but I'd like to do one more thing. He said, if you could just, I could do the same thing and put the fleece down here, but this time make the fleece dry and the ground and everything around wet with dew. Woke up next morning, grabbed that fleece. It was as dry as it could be, and there was dew everywhere on the ground. Now, Gideon's faith has risen again to the next level. Something is about to happen here that might challenge anybody's faith. You see, Gideon went and gathered 32,000 soldiers to fight the Midianites and the Amalekites. 32,000. Now, the Midianites and the Amalekites were many more than that. They were probably around 200 to 250,000. And they were all camped in this big old valley. Now, Gideon knows he's going to have to go and fight with 32,000 against 200,000+ Midianites and the Amalekites. He knows this, but he also knows this, that his faith has risen because God told him he was going to be victorious. So he's got 32,000. So he's thinking, well, this is almost 8-1 odds here. But he's thinking that my soldiers can take 8 of them out easy, each one. But God says, Gideon, you have too many men. Now, Gideon probably heard that and immediately thought, what? 32,000, 200,000+ over here, and I have too many? That's what I'd be thinking. And so God tells Gideon, anybody, you tell all your soldiers, anybody who wants to go home because they're scared, they just don't feel like fighting, you just tell them they can go, no strings attached, they can just go home, be with their families. So Gideon's thinking, okay, 32,000, these men came because they want to fight, so this is going to be good because I might lose 1,000. I might lose 1,500 that go home. So I'll be good. All right, anybody that's scared, fearful, don't want to stick around, you can go home, no strings attached, you won't get in any kind of trouble. See you later. 22,000 of them walked off. That left him 10,000. Now Gideon's thinking, 32,000. Now I've got 10,000. I think I can still do this. It's going to be hard, but I think I can still pull this off. He had this mentality, I believe, because God comes again and says to Gideon, Gideon, you still have too many men. What? What? Yeah, you got too many men. Lord, do you realize there's 200 plus thousand out there, and I've got 10,000 to go fight them? There's no way I have too many. You got too many men. Take them down to the creek and get them, let them have a drink. And then I'll tell you, God said, I'll tell you which ones you can let go. So they go down to drink, and 9,700 of these men get down on all fours and suck up the water with their lips. I've done that a many times. How many's ever done that in a creek? Man, first service, every hand went up. You've done that before. I've done it many a time, man. That's kind of funny. But I've done it a lot. Still do it. That's why I'm so healthy. It helps your immune system to drink stuff like that when you can. It's the way I believe. That's what I believe, okay? Anyways, all these men, the 9,700 of them got down and drank like that, and 300 of them picked the water up and drank it like I've done that. Tell me you've done that, for Pete's sakes. All right, there you go. Man, so that's the trick. Y'all, man, y'all would have had to go to fight. If you'd have been Gideon's people, you would be one of the 300 that God said, now you got it, 300 against 200 plus 1,000. So all you people out there that raise your hands, you're ready for battle. That's right. You're ready for battle. You see, when he had 32,000, and he thought, man, anybody can go home, but not everybody wants to go where you're going. You see, he had 32,000, but 22,000 of them did not want to go where Gideon was going. You walk this life of faith, this spiritual walk that you're on, and you can try to get people to go with you, and you may get some, but there's people just don't want to go where you're going. And then the 10,000 that's left, they wanted to stay and fight. But see, they may have wanted to stay and fight, but they weren't called. They wanted to be a part of something they weren't called to do. My wife works at the Assembly of God Missions, World Missions up there in Springfield. Been there, I don't know, 80, 90 years, something like that. Seemed like it, 43 years, that's a long time. But she works up there, which sometimes we'll talk about missionaries, you know, when we talk about missions and stuff like that. And sometimes she's come home with stories of these missionaries that want to be, want to be missionaries. And they come in and they go through the interview process. And during the interview process, they uncover some unsightly things about these people. And they almost have to look at them and go, you know what? I'm sorry, but you are not called to do this. Now, they kind of thought they were, but they really weren't. Now, maybe they weren't called to do it for now. Maybe they're called to do it, but they're not ready yet. You see, these 32,000 ended up getting in the fight, but it was later. Okay? It was later when they pursued these Midianites, and what was left after this battle, this short battle that Gideon got involved in, they did get involved in the fight. They were called, but not for that time, for sure. And that's the thing with people. Sometimes they're called. Yes, you might be called to do something. It might not be today. It might not be tomorrow. But if you have a calling on your life, it's going to unfold somewhere. It is going to unfold somewhere in time. You see, there was these 300 that were left. Man, they had to be thinking, this is not good. I mean, seriously, from the human standpoint, because, you see, Gideon had all this faith because he saw this theophany. He had the fleece, the wool fleece, and all this stuff. He had these things happen, so his faith has risen way up here. But that don't necessarily transfer down to people below him. And so I'm sure there was a little angst about this. And so he gathers all of his 300 men, and he goes, here's what we're going to do, guys. We're going to break up into companies of 300, so three different groups. We're going to surround this mountainside here above this valley. Spread out. I want you to do exactly what I do. And somewhere in here, I believe God kind of impressed in him what to do, or even told him what to do. And this is a simple thing that he was going to do. This is it right here. Take a jar and put a torch down in this jar. And then hold a trumpet. And when I give the signal, break the jar, grab the torch, hold it up, say, "For the sword of the Lord and for Gideon," shout this real loud, and then blow those trumpets with your right hand, and we'll see what God's going to do. And that's what they did. Y'all know the end of the story. 300 men. God used 300 men. But you see, the reason that God told Gideon to get rid of all these men, because God wanted the glory for himself. With 32,000, man, that's a tough battle, but you did have 32,000. You did go ahead and beat them. Yeah, that's pretty cool, but was God a part of that? Or not? I don't know. 10,000, that's a pretty tough battle right there. But 300, that wasn't you guys. That was all God. That was all God. God wanted the glory for himself. He wanted Israel to see that the hand of God was still working on their behalf. Why was he like this? God is a God of grace and mercy, friends. I don't care where you go in this path of life, he is willing to accept you back at the drop of a hat. As soon as you get desperate for him and you need him, he will love on you and his grace will cover you. He'll forgive you. It's utterly amazing. This is the God that we serve. And they broke those jars, held those torches, and blew those trumpets. And when they did, that entire army down there committed suicide with each other. They started fighting each other and killing each other. And there was very few of them left, and they fled. And when they did, all of Israel took out and pursued them. And it was quite a deal. What a victory. But it was given so that God could be glorified once again in this nation of Israel. That's why I say when things happen in your life that you say it's a good thing that happened, give God the glory. I don't care what it is. Give God the glory. Because that's what he wants. He wants you to recognize who he is in your life. So I would say to you this morning, what might is it in your life that you have left laid dormant that you don't even think that you have? Are you a humble person? You don't even realize it. Do you have a teachable spirit? Are you teachable? Are you spiritually hungry? Do you care about things? Do you care about other people? Most of you, I guarantee that's one right there. Most of you have. You care about your family, friends, and other people. You feel like you're weak? Well, in your weakness, he is made strong. For when I am weak, it says in 2 Corinthians, then I am strong. So take that might of yours, my friends, the might that you have, and use it to glorify God, to fight battles that he'll see that you're going to find yourself in. But with those mights, those strengths that you have, you will win. Stand to your feet if you would. Lord, we're so grateful and thankful for your word that you give to us.